STX responds with a puppet. They don't even respond like in a press conference of like the director or something. I mean, they put a puppet up there whose name is Fred Esk, E-S-Q, like Fred Esquire or something, you know? He's like a fictional puppet lawyer.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
All right. Hey, Ted, welcome to episode 29 of Trailer Junkies Podcast.
Wow, 29 weeks down.
We're getting there. We're getting there. I don't know where there is, but we're getting there.
It's about the journey, really.
So how was your week?
My week was good. Good week. Having fun with this new, the SayCast that we're starting out. I don't want to go too much into it, but it's cool. We're kind of chaptering, putting in a little added content. You know, we always say the best way to listen to our podcast is on the website, and that's still the case. But I think this is a good interim space if we can get it out of beta.
Yeah, I just learned about it this afternoon when you sent me some links, and I played around with it on a few podcasts, and what you shared, I mean, it seems pretty cool, and, you know, it's like you can comment at certain points or whatever, or you can see certain points in Twitter. I don't know. I'm still kind of learning it, but it looks really cool.
Yeah.
So, and I think the concept that, I don't even know the guy's name, but the concept that he's coming up with is definitely something I want to be more interested in and kind of follow a little bit.
Yeah.
Cool.
How about your week?
Week was a little bit slow. I mean, it's the last like in-class week for the kids at work. Next week is finals and then summer vacation. Last Sunday, you know, we record this on Fridays. So last Sunday, I brewed an IPA with my father-in-law. And I don't know, I'm probably like 50 batches in, something like that, for what I've done. And it's his first time ever observing a brewing session. So he was really excited.
Oh, that's cool.
And looking forward to getting Son of Keezer, you know, filled with some beers. And I plan on brewing again this Sunday, which first time I'm ever going to redo, or not redo, but I'm going to brew again a batch that I did, which is going to be a Russian Imperial Stout that's going to be bourbon barrel aged. And the first one I did, I think you've had, and it was like amazing. So I can't help but want to do it again. It was so good. So
I've had a lot of beer up in Lompoc.
Yeah, that's true. You're like, I don't remember, you know, but oh, and then I wanted to let you know, too, that the number one reason I think, you know, going back a few episodes to Bohemian Rhapsody, the reason that I was so into that is because Freddie Mercury wants to ride his bicycle. I don't know how I missed that reference during that episode, man. That's just, but I had to bring it back.
There you go.
All right. Hey, how about we do, I know you have a Black Klansman that we need to get to now, like weeks later.
Yes.
Because we've been promising.
House cleaning.
Yes, house cleaning. But let's do a quick solo recap.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we saw it last week, and actually you did too, though. I guess it was last week was opening weekend. Right, right. All right.
What are your thoughts?
My thoughts. Yeah. Okay, so I'll give you the quick highlights of my thoughts. And one, so I'm sitting, we're at the movie theater, we're sitting there, and there's the one scene, you know, stop now, maybe fast forward, we don't know how far ahead, but there's going to be some spoilers if you haven't seen it, so just know that going into this. PSA. So we're sitting there, and he's getting like enlisted into the Imperial Navy for a pilot, right? And the enlistment officer, whatever, says, oh, who are you with? He's like, I'm not with anyone. He's like, oh, you're solo, you know? And it's like, and I'm like, really? That's how he got his name? That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, see? Yeah. Okay.
Right. And the guy next to me is like, and I hear him say to his girlfriend or wife, whatever, he goes, oh my God, that's how he got his name is Solo. And then my next thought, you know, I didn't say anything, but my next thought was like, yeah, they didn't know what to do. Some writer just dropped some like BS line because, you know, just to get it out of the way. And they got it out of the way to move on with the story, you know? And it's just like, eh, I, you know, I don't know if that's how Lucas was thinking of it when he created Han Solo or whatever, but it was, I mean, I didn't think it was a bad way to say who he was or how he got his name, but it wasn't like the favorite way, I think, that I would have liked to. And I don't know what I would have liked to have seen, but maybe something a little bit more creative.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you talk about Lucas, I don't think his first instincts on naming characters was so great. I think he wanted to call Luke Starkiller.
He did, yeah.
So I don't know, but that was such a great... Skywalker is, you know, is poetic and a little more, you know, easygoing. Solo, so I've heard you are in the majority of what I've heard online as far as that scene particularly.
Like the throwaway line sort of a thing?
Yeah, like the Empire named him, you know, that kind of thing. Like it was... some people actually went further than you of like not really thinking about it, where they said, oh, it's very weak to keep the name that the Empire gave you. It's a sign of weakness. It's, you know, it's...
Oh,
you know,
I see where people were going.
Some people are going to like that road. But I thought of it more of an Ellis Island kind of thing where... You know, refugees and fugitives. Not
yeah,
fugitives,
okay,
but,
okay.
But, you know, when you're a refugee and you land in Ellis Island, the Island of Tears or whatever it was, those customs officers often just named the people as they're coming through without giving much thought to it. So the fact that this was a throwaway kind of imperial, I'm naming you Solo because you're alone. You know what I mean? I like that it was a throwaway. And to me, the way that he was in that perch above, you know, above the Solo, it kind of gave the, you know, physical authority and the spatial authority.
Oh, sure.
And it likened it to, you know, Ellis Island. It felt like it felt familiar in that way. And it felt like, you know, the people that were refugees and the people that immigrated to this country didn't change their name that they were given when they landed in Ellis Island. They used it as a badge of like, yes, our name was changed, but now we've built generations on that name.
And then the other side, so the Lando character, Donald Glover.
Uh-huh.
You know, I felt he did a good job trying to play Billy Dee playing Lando than he did playing Lando.
I get that.
Yeah,
Ann leaned over to me and said, why is he doing a Billy Dee impersonation, like a vocal impersonation?
Exactly, you know. Like, I felt he was playing Billy Dee playing Lando, and that, like, I think fell a little short. I think he did an okay job. I'm not saying he didn't. I think he did an okay job trying to, like, fill that role, because all these characters you have to figure, or you have to consider, I mean, they're, like, iconic, you know? I mean, when Billy Dee walks out and he sees Princess Leia and Leia, whatever, and he's like, well, what do we have here? It's like, how do you play that? Like, how do you recreate that character?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's so hard.
One of my favorite things was that cloakroom dough. Come on. Mm. If you had a ship, would you not have a cloakroom?
And you know what made me mad? They kept calling them capes. I'm like, they're not capes, they're cloaks. Oh, that was driving me nuts. But hey, whatever. I guess, you know, pick and choose. And then Emilia Clarke.
Yeah.
You know, she played Kira.
She looked completely different, right?
Well, I mean, that wig is, or that blonde hair is a wig. I mean, her dark hair is her natural hair.
Right.
But I mean, yeah, she looked great. You know, I mean, I can't deny that one. But, you know, the one thing okay, so they created a new story arc that has to go somewhere but end before A New Hope. And if you look at the ending of Solo, it ends where we were speculating it was going to end at the cantina right before he meets Obi-Wan and Greedo, who shoots first, that whole nonsense. So that's what we were speculating. It didn't happen. However, he made the mention or the reference that, hey, I'm going to meet this guy for a new job. I'm assuming, I don't even know if he said it, but, you know, it's Jabba the Hutt, of course.
Yeah.
then Tatooine is where he's heading and he's going to hook up eventually, right? So there's probably at least one more solo movie.
Well, it doesn't even have to be a solo movie.
It doesn't have to. You're right.
Lando's. It could be Lando's story, you know, Cloud City prior to Empire Cloud City.
Or maybe they don't ever come back because they don't need to come back. I mean, you already know what the interim, do they need to spell it out for you like a Wikipedia article? The one thing that makes me think they're coming back with another movie of something in between is the Kira character that Emilia Clarke plays. They kind of left her hanging. You don't know which side she's on because she's playing both sides of the same coin. She flew off in that city ship.
Yeah, the yacht.
Yeah, and she's kind of like the de facto leader of that city or whatever. So we don't know which side she's on, who she's playing, and how she still may or may not fit into Solo's life, and how, and she's got to die somewhere because it, then you've just had all those other movies that she wasn't there, you know, going through to Jedi. So I don't know.
I think the universe is big enough that people can exist without existing in the other movies.
So she could tuck herself into another corner somewhere.
Yeah.
Right.
Darth Maul, and I guess he's just Maul now because he's no longer Darth. That was a nice nod. And I think that, like you said, in that same, the same scenes you were just talking about, I think having Maul there.
So it's parallel.
Yeah, as the head of this syndicate. So it definitely opens up more for Kira to chew on with Han and all of that space. So I think it's great. I think I would love another movie in this space. You know, it would probably be sold as a standalone.
Like another Star Wars story, not something that's linear into the, I mean, it's all canon, I guess, but.
Yeah, apparently they threw it all away and now they're rebuilding it. And they're actually using a lot of the canon, but I think they wanted to free themselves up on being tied to using the canon. Like Beckett's character is actually based on other characters throughout there. I love the idea to reset Lucas's redo, like you said, that Greedo shot first thing. When he shoots Beckett at the end, it's totally to dispel the idea that Han only shoots in retaliation, you know? Han learns to shoot first from Beckett, and he kills Beckett as the first of his, you know, shooting first, asking questions later.
Exactly, yeah.
Kind of scenarios.
But, you know, and then my final comment, maybe complaint, and this has been one of the complaints that I've had for a long time about the legacy and legend of Han completing the Kessel run in 12 parsecs. A parsec is a distance measurement. It's not a time measurement.
Oh, I thought they did great. They did great at explaining that.
Did I miss it?
Well, okay, so basically there's a black hole in the middle of Kessel.
Right.
And you have to steer your ship around that black hole. You can't get too close to that black hole because there's crazy space squids and the gravitational hole, gravity hole that will suck you in.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that field. So normally it takes you 20 parsecs to arc around the gravitational field of the pull of that hole. He cut through that space. So he actually drew a shorter distance.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Through the space. And that's why he was sucked. They were sucked into that black hole until the Millennium Falcon's, you know, engines kicked back on with the full nitro.
They got a couple more drops.
Yeah. And then they pushed their way out. But he went too close to the black hole that no other person had made it through going that close.
Perfect. Now that you say that, I do, yeah, you're right. Maybe I was thinking of it more in like the distance, but now that you mention it, it is time because 20.
No, no, no. No, no, no. It's distance because.
Or at the distance around is what I meant. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Because he cut across the middle rather than going around the outside.
Exactly. Because he had to go around the gravitational pull. No, everyone else had to go around the gravitational pull of this gravity well, I think they called it. But it's a small black hole.
Okay. I retract my comment.
Frank should be the one explaining all that to us.
Yeah, there you go. You know, other than that, I mean, I thought it was entertaining. It was fun. One thing I was kind of happy is they didn't have, like, it wasn't in your face magic, you know, like sometimes I think in Star Wars, you could get too much of the Jedi magic going on.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And sometimes it's a little bit over the top and a little bit like just, I'm not going to say ruins the story, but like, you know, if you look at Phantom Menace and how quickly they run, and then there's other scenes where they can't move very fast, it's like, well, why didn't you just run really fast? He did it earlier in the movie, you know? Like, it's just bizarre to me the way they kind of play it out. In this movie, they didn't do, you know, they kind of avoided those odd scenes that could explain away other scenes and such. And in this one, they didn't do that. So I thought that was a nod in the positive direction.
Yeah.
Overall, you know, I thought it was decent. I mean, I would definitely go see the next one when it comes out. And I guess, you know, the final thing I want to say about Star Wars is I'm often skeptical about whether or not it's going to be good because I've been burned so many times. And there's been some movies that have been, like, awesome. And I'm just like, damn, that was a good one, you know? And then there's others where you're just, like, rolling your eyes like, oh, God, when is this going to be over?
Where does it place in the recent movies, you know, in the ranking?
Oh, man. You know, I'd have to think that one longer than this podcast, but what was the one, man, you know, and that's the other thing. I think it was Rogue One. What was the one where they went to the tropical island or whatever?
Yeah.
Was that Rogue One?
They went to Scarif on Rogue One, in Rogue One.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I mean, I'd have to think, and that was where they ended with Leia right before A New Hope, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's the one that dovetailed perfectly into A New Hope. And it had the perfect cameo of Darth Vader just kicking ass for like 5 minutes and that's it.
Right, right. Yeah, that one I liked, I think, better than this one.
I definitely, so there's a big Rogue One camp and an anti-Rogue One camp, but Rogue One is continuing to hold out as one of my favorites. And I think it does what you're talking about with the Force. It actually addresses the Force with the Jedi Masters, with the Jedi Masters, and when he's talking about the Force, he's talking about it in a much more spiritual way than it's ever been handled before. Yeah. So I like the idea that it's this idea of hope and faith, not so much, not so refined as it is in the prequel trilogy and the original trilogy, and now the, you know, the sequel trilogy. You know, those, the development of Jedi powers as the Force are so well developed that there's no hope and mystery to it.
Well, right. And once, I mean, in the prequel, I mean, I know now we're going off on Star. We got to get to our show.
Okay.
But my last comment, though, is once they brought in the midichlorians, I mean, it just wiped out the entire idea of what the Force is about, and now it becomes biologic.
Right.
But anyway, whatever. We need to go down that rabbit hole.
We could go hours and hours on that.
Yeah, we could. Okay, so let's move on. And how about your Black Klansman 3-word review? Because I know it's been weeks and everybody is like waiting to hear it.
All right, so Black Klansman 3-word review, I originally I was really hung up on Jordan Peele producing, and I wanted to do some Gremlins 2 throw, and it wasn't working, Spike Lee, you know, all that wasn't working. So I went super simple, but super inside baseball, and I went with Campbell Hall Proud.
Campbell Hall Proud?
Yes.
What's Campbell? Okay, you got to explain this. I have no clue what you're talking about.
So Campbell Hall is a very high scale Los Angeles high school, and it's right here in the valley. It's Laurel Canyon. And as I was trying to dig all around Black Klansman to figure out, you know, oh, maybe I do something about fathers and sons and, you know, Denzel playing an undercover cop. And then now, you know, his son is playing a cop going undercover as a Klansman, you know, kind of like Black and White to what's that other Training Day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I went down that road, and as I was researching it, apparently John David Washington is Denzel's son, and obviously Denzel was in Los Angeles during the time that John David was growing up. So of course John David would go to a high school in Los Angeles, and I guess they didn't want to go the Harvard Westlake route, which is the other very affluent high school in the area, private high school. So they went with Campbell Hall, which I pass on a regular basis, and I'm like, like, oh, look, there's Campbell Hall, you know? And so it was just very interesting to me to think, like, people grew up here, and I know I have children, and they're growing up in Los Angeles and Burbank and in the Valley. And it's just, it's still very strange to me as an East Coaster to think that, you know, people have lived their whole lives here in Los Angeles.
Okay, I got you. I got you. Now it makes sense.
So Campbell Hall proud.
Nice. All right. So moving forward with Peppermint.
Peppermint.
Peppermint is a Jennifer Garner movie where if I had to give a title, I'd just call it Death Wish.
Death Wish. But Death Wish is already being remade with Bruce Willis, and that already came out, directed by Eli Roth. So this is very, it's a revenge. It's a, you know, typical modern normal family where everybody dies except for one person, and that person bides their time, trains, and then goes and kills the people that killed their family. So simple story as always. You'll be happy to why I picked this for this week.
Well, okay, let's hear.
The trailer to the trailer,
yeah,
is exactly what we were hoping for.
It hooked you.
It hooked you. And it has Jennifer Garner saying exposition things that she doesn't revisit in the rest of the trailer. She compacts the thing that she's going to do in the rest of the trailer. I'm going to explain to you what I'm going to do in the rest of this trailer, in this trailer to the trailer. But we're not going to go back and rehash these lines that I'm saying in the trailer to the trailer later on. I'll just show you the corrupt guy. I'll show you me kicking ass. I'll show you me getting my revenge, you know? So she tells you what she's going to do. And then the whole rest of the trailer is her actually just doing the things that she said she was going
to
do.
About time these people are listening to Trailer Junkies podcast. And I couldn't agree more with you. I mean, I watched it and I thought, here we go, trailer to the trailer. And I was waiting for like 10 seconds later for her to say the lines. And it goes through the whole trailer and she never revisits it. And I thought, wow, that was, and I watched it again. And I'm like, making sure I didn't miss something.
Exactly.
And I'm like, now that, it hooked me, but it was like a whole other part of the movie. And it just, the way it played out was not really like, it wasn't problematic in any way.
Right.
You know, it just kept going with the flow in a sense, you know? So right. I thought that was totally cool.
No, totally. So yay. Good trailer to trailer.
Yeah. I mean, we finally got one because, you know, and the funny thing is, like you mentioned a week or two ago, whatever, we're so sensitized to it now that we see it and we're just like, oh, here we go. But now when we see it and we see a good one, like we immediately recognize it. I know I did.
Yeah, totally.
So the one thing you mentioned was, she, you know, it's a simple story. Her family gets killed. You know, she goes into hiding for 5 years. She trains and she does all that she's doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
The question that I have is, where do you learn these skills? Who's training these skills? And how is it that you're hiding out? No one knows. You're like, you're quote unquote off the grid. What does that mean? You're not on Facebook? I mean, like, what is off the grid in today's world? I mean, really?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the nuance. Those are the questions that hopefully the movie will address at some point and give you a satisfying, you know, answer to that. It really felt like she had a bit of Robin Hood in her too. Like the community that she had hidden away in over these 5 years, when the authorities see that she has enacted her revenge and strung up those killers of her family on the Ferris wheeler on the anniversary of the event, you know?
Yeah.
It is the police's obligation to go and find the killers of these killers, because that they just have to do that. And when they get to the community where they have tracked her back to, everybody in that community is like protecting her, defending her, hiding her away and things like that. And then my thought is that she's been hiding in this community and been doing the little things to protect that community that nobody cares about. You can kind of hide in plain sight in the slums of any city. So I think that's the interesting angle for me. There's so much exposition in this whole trailer that if all you care about is the revenge plot, then just watch a trailer again. You know?
Right, right.
Because hopefully there's nuanced stuff throughout this that makes it worth a view.
Hopefully. I mean, she's definitely a one-woman kill squad. I mean, she's insane, you know, crazy. But I mean, the other side of it too, I think, is you have to suspend reality with these kind of movies, because the body count that she begins to amass, there is no way that the FBI and local police and just, you know, the whole thing. I mean, there's no way they're not going to eventually catch her before you're blowing up warehouses and she's showing up with silencers. And, I mean, so, you know, you have to suspend reality and go into it and say, sure, yeah, I get it. This might happen. But with that said, can someone enact revenge? Oh, I certainly think so. I just don't think they can act revenge over and over and over and over. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like you said, the suspension of disbelief is there. The writer of this was the writer of London Has Fallen. The director is the director of Taken, you know? So, I mean, that legacy cell alone is going to let you know that you're in this space. You're along for the ride, and I don't know why, but it feels like this take on a Taken-like story, it feels like it's going to go deeper, but it maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't have to, you know, but I feel like it will.
You know what this movie reminded me of, though? But made me think of. So every time I get summons for jury duty, my fear is I'm going to land on a jury where it's like MS-13 murder trial or something, you know? Bodies in the back of the U-Haul or, you know, I don't know, whatever. I'm just making it up. But
yeah,
you're going to have some crazy, like, mass murder, like, drug cartel. I mean, who knows what?
Right.
And the dudes are going to be sitting there like these guys, right? Tattoos over faces and necks and, you know, whatever. I mean, like crazy stuff that's going on. And then they're going to be...
And they're just looking at you.
Yeah. They're going to be looking at me in the jury and they're going to say, okay, go bring us back a guilty verdict or whatever, you know, whatever they're going to say. And it's like, and you know damn well these like maniacs are guilty.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I mean, do you come back with a guilty? And next thing you know, like, I mean, they put a hit on you and your family or something. I'm not kidding. Like, I think about that every time I get a jury summons. I'm like, what is this trial? And, you know, who do these people, like the people that I might have to convict, who do they know? And whoever they know, are they going to come at the jury or something based on your verdict, you know? And like when she was talking about the corrupt judges, the corrupt system, the corrupt everything that's on the payroll of this gang,
yeah,
this cartel. Well, I mean, it might not even be like money. It might just be the fear of your own life that makes you just go in a direction.
Yeah, just have somebody walking up to your garage when you're in there with your bike or something and they say, hey, you know, how's that going? You know, that's all it takes.
Oh, and then it's just like, yeah, you know, I know
innocent.
Justice. Yeah, I know justice needs to be served, but at the same time, like, I want to keep living for my kids, you know? I mean, like, whatever. And I think about that all the time when I go to jury duty, and I'm just like, God, what if I get put on, and then I got to vote, or, you know, judge, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And then it's like, man, and then now there's, like, a hit on me. And who knows where it's going to, like, you know, some mob story or something. I mean, maybe I watched too many movies or something. I don't know. But
too many trailers.
Yeah, I watched too many trailers. Like, you know, in 2 minutes, my life is all done, right? But anyway, yeah, no, that really, like, touched home for me because, like I said, even before this trailer, like, I always think about that stuff whenever I get summoned. And I'm you know, just it's a bother for me, seriously.
I really like that Jennifer Gardner took this role, you know? I mean, she was in most recently this Love, Simon, kind of a coming of age. She's a mother in a coming of age movie. She's been the mother in Alexander and the No Good, Horrible, Very Bad Day, you know, Disney movie. Timothy Green, she played the mother. So she's had a long string of mother roles in family dramas and comedies. And now she's kind of digging back her Alias roots and getting that action on, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I love the art for this. you know, her with the bullet wings.
Oh, the bullet wings. Yeah. Awesome.
That's kind of, you know, and it's just a beautiful thing. So.
And Ted did a cool montage. Well, maybe not a montage, but like the way he made the...
I mocked up the poster. Yeah.
She's looking down at her name, you know, Trailer Junkies podcast with the bullet wings. I mean, it's really cool. So you'll have to go to the website and check it out.
Awesome.
All right, Ted, three-word review.
Three-word review I talked about a little bit, but Sidney Bristow's Revenge.
Sidney Bristow's Revenge. Nice.
So Sidney Bristow, for those who don't know, is the name of the character in Alias.
Yeah.
Now she's finally gotten her revenge, her cold, cold revenge as many, many years have passed.
Yeah, Sidney Bristow is a vigilante. There you go. All right, the Sisters Brothers.
Sisters Brothers. Another one that I picked specifically for the trailer open.
Oh, the trailer open was phenomenal.
And it just played on, it was very specific to the trailer when it plays out with the dialogue. You know, two of these very, very sharp actors. John C. Reilly is amazing to me. I think he's funnier than Will Ferrell as an actor.
Yeah.
But him and Will Ferrell are great together. So it's hard to parse them up, you know, to set, tease them out from one another. Their comic timing together is great. So when you have him with Joaquin, it shows another level of great comedic timing and just acting off of other actors. So when they're talking to each other as they're trying to...
I had the improv feel too.
Yeah, when they're talking to each other as they're trying to shoot up into this house at the beginning of this trailer, and it plays out in complete darkness except for gunfire flash.
And I love the it's like shoot, 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 and then it's like click, click, click.
And not only that, the gunfire flash illuminates our first title cards.
Totally, yeah.
So the title cards are like half visible, half invisible, and they go away as fast as the muzzle flare goes. And, you know, it just puts you in this place, you know, in this, it pulls you in so quickly and so viscerally that I like that approach to trailering, you know?
No, it was totally artistic. And arguably, you know, in my opinion, it's one of the best trailers I've seen with that beginning, because as it's going, you're just captivated. And like, you can't stop because you're thinking, where is this thing going? And you're not like, it doesn't need a trailer to the trailer. You're not clicking away because of how it begins. I mean, it was just brilliant.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with the, and like you said too, the gunshots illuminating the opening cards, where they kind of like, they're like, it's like the gunshots are flickering them in, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the VO, when they're like, well, when we get out of here, we can open the store. And they're talking about some nonsense.
Mundane topics of conversation.
Exactly. In the middle of a gun shootout in the middle of the night or whatever. I mean, it's just like your mind's eye is going in lots of directions. You don't know what to expect or where it's going or what this movie is even about.
Yeah.
And then it just, you know, breaks open into what appears nothing more than just a fun, old-fashioned, just enjoyable Western, kind of like a Tombstone or, you know, something in that regard.
Yeah, it's, you know, your typical Western heist outlaw.
Totally, yeah.
You know, and I think, to me, it uses that tableau to paint this picture, but it feels like everything is heightened in this space.
Right.
You know, like, because of the caliber of these actors, you know, everything that they're doing is that much more impactful. And the fact that they're brothers and they have this crazy name that they call themselves, you know, the Sisters Brothers. And, you know, the way that they're drinking and how John C. Reilly cares about being punched in public by his brother, you know,
right.
It's really just amazing comedic timing with a fun story. I am not a fan of Westerns for the whole, which is funny because we just talked about Solo, and Solo's like a space Western.
Yeah. Okay. The Wild West.
Yeah, it's got a train robbery in it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
You got standoffs between tribes, you know. I think, you know, there's even like headgear on the Cloud Riders, you know. So it looks like they're, you know, Native Americans versus Indians. So
totally,
so that's
yeah.
that's something, but your traditional, like, True Grit. I love the Coen brothers.
Oh, True Grit was great. And the remake.
I love the Coen brothers, but I couldn't get into it.
Oh, you didn't like it?
I didn't. Unforgiven, one of the best modern, you know, Westerns of our time. And I can't.
Oh, wow.
I wanted to like it. I wanted to get into it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I have a hesitation to liking Westerns and this space. And that's another reason Westworld has yet to pull me back in.
Got you.
Because of that whole apprehension of the Wild West. But this one is intricate enough that it has enough going for it. I think to me, Wild West signifies simplicity. And I think this is a complexity that is placed in a simplistic tableau.
There's been some Westerns I didn't care for and some Westerns that I did enjoy. And I tend to like the faster paced, more modern flair type Westerns, like a Tombstone maybe.
Yeah.
You know, where Tombstone I enjoyed, but Wyatt Earp I didn't care for as much.
Well, Wyatt Earp is like 5 hours long, I think, so that could be part of it.
You know, because Kevin Costner, I mean...
Sorry, it's 3 hours and 11 minutes long.
Yeah. And Kevin Costner, you know, it's like The Postman or whatever. You know, he makes these, like, epic movies that are just, like, ridiculously long. And they're kind of slower. There's a little bit more dialogue. And I don't know, maybe, like, after a while with these long movies, you just, like, tend to just, like, fall asleep or something. I don't know, but... But Tombstone was a good one, I thought. You know, when I say good, I'm not saying Academy Award winner, but it was like...
Oh, it's fun.
It held your interest, you know?
Yeah.
I totally see this doing that. Holding your interest. It's going to be, like, rock solid as far as the story, the comedic, the acting. And my last comment I have is I can't stand when period pieces have modern flair, right?
Uh-huh.
So they're playing Soft Cell, and right the first time I watched it, I was like, okay, Soft Cell, whatever. But it plays so awesome into it that I hope the music doesn't play into the movie.
Right.
Like, I hope the music's there for the trailer because it's great with the trailer. But the music box is enough.
Yes.
Because the music box is playing Soft Cell. But it reminded me of A Knight's Tale when they were playing Queen, going back to Queen. And when they're playing, you know, We Will Rock You and all this stuff, when they're doing A Knight's Tale with the jousting and all that. And it was just like, you know, it just doesn't fit with the period piece.
Right.
And, you know, again, it's what the story is, suspend belief and so on. But generally speaking, though, I think it fits well into the trailer, and I hope they don't have it in the movie. So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I was actually thinking of Westworld and the way that, you know, that heart-shaped box was playing. Or, you know, it was the player piano too, had some, you know, some other things going on with
sure,
it.
Sure, sure.
That. So I agree with you. I think it has its right place here. And I don't really expect it to be in the movie.
I don't, you know, I don't think so. I mean, I think it plays well for the trailer. And if they leave it to the music box as like a nod to something that we don't know about yet, for example, then, you know, I think that's fine. But I don't want to hear lyrics and all that kind of stuff to a modern song, to a period piece of like 1875, where they're trying to get gold in, you know, the hills of, you know, the foothills of the Sierra Nevada or something.
Right, right. All right, so will you see this?
Yes, I will see this. I don't, I can say with certainty I'm not going to see it in a theater, but this is a movie, though, I would definitely, it comes to streaming and I see it, you know, coming across Netflix or Amazon Prime or even like maybe a Redbox or something, I would pick it up for a night, you know, absolutely.
Have you hit up the Redbox since we talked about it?
Yeah, we've done Redbox.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But
definitely.
But yeah, not in the theater though. I mean, you know, it's just and the main reason is because going to the theater is such it's hard work.
It's laborious. Yes, it is a whole deal.
I'll definitely watch it though. How about you?
Same here. Definitely streaming. You know, if I can, I'll give it a try, but I might check out if it gets too Western at the top, which I feel like it might. I feel like it might be. How about Peppermint? We didn't say. I think it's same answer for Peppermint.
Peppermint I probably won't watch, no matter what. At all, yeah.
I'm miss streaming on that one.
You know, let me get to one thing I wanted to mention, though. So when, you know, and I get why they did it the way they did, but when they get to the actor cards to show you, like, you know, Joaquin Phoenix and Jake Gyllenhaal and all this stuff, they happen so fast that you're having a hard time keeping up with the names. Like, you can't read it fast enough. I mean, they're like split seconds, you know? And I get why they do it, because it's within the beat and tempo of the music. I mean, slow it down a half a second so I can at least read it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But overall, it looks fun.
A good time.
Yeah. How about a three-word review?
Okay, so three-word review for this one is a brilliantly moronic heist.
Brilliantly moronic heist. So you're saying moronic because the brothers have their hijinks with each other? Like,
I think the characters are written as morons, but I think the actors portraying them are so good and such craftsmen of the acting craft that they make them believable as these high functioning idiots.
Got you. Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, like, if they were just the idiots, they couldn't pull off these heists. If they were just as good at something, then they would do other things. But it's the combination of being really good at doing this one specific thing makes them, you know, good outlaws.
Yeah, yeah, okay, I got you. It makes perfect sense. All right, moving on to the last one.
Cool. Should we take a break?
Yeah, you know what? Why don't we? Because I think we need a break before we get into the Happy Time Murders.
we need to put all the kids to bed. If your kids have been listening to this thus far, put them in bed. And then after the break, we'll talk about the Happy Time Murders.
If you enjoy our trailer reviews, or even if you hate them, let us know. We love feedback. We're on Twitter at TJunkiesPodcast and Instagram at TrailerJunkiesPodcast. You can also comment on the episodes at TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. Our email is info@TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. And you could also leave us a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's get back to it. The Happy Time Murders. Reluctantly.
A Red Band trailer.
You know what, though? That's funny, because this, I think, might be one of the first trailers I've seen instead of a green, like, intro for the MPAA.
Yeah,
it was a red, and it said something to the effect of not approved audiences. What does it say? It says, like,
it says restricted viewing has been approved for appropriate audiences.
Yeah, appropriate audiences.
It is a red band. So green band trailer is married to, it always has been married to, a film of the same level. So if you're in a movie theater and you're watching a PG movie, you're only going to see PG trailers for that movie. So they always say it goes along. But now that we're in a space where trailers exist in the wild, in the open, in YouTube, they've incorporated this red band trailer to allow you to know that it's not safe for work or not safe for your kids to watch. You know, it's kind of the MPAA's way of putting an R rating on a trailer that might other, you know, especially this trailer and like Ted. Remember Ted?
Yeah.
And Ted 2. Those movies, because they have puppets in it, because they have, you know, a teddy bear.
They appear innocent.
It feels like it's innocent. I mean, even that movie Chappie. Do you remember Chappie?
No, that one I never heard of.
So Chappie is about a robot, and it's kind of like Short Circuit. Remember Short Circuit back in the day?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know Short Circuit.
So they kind of did this take on Short Circuit where a police robot becomes sentient, and he, you know, finds that he's, you know, he is self-aware. And then he goes and he joins a gang, and the gang has him do crazy, you know, robbery heists and stuff. But he's kind of like a child, so he does it to please his friends, you know. And it really, Chappie, the sound of the title and all the posters of this cute looking robot, my kids wanted to see it. You know, they're like, oh, Chappie, look, he's so fun and happy. And I'm like,
right.
He's killing everybody that he comes in contact with, you know.
Oh, man.
It's Neil Blomkin from District 9, you know. It's not a happy director, you know.
Right.
So this is what they've come up with, this Red Band trailer, to emphasize the fact that it's not safe for work and not safe for children.
Well, it was funny. I was talking with people at work today, and they're like, oh, what are you guys doing this week? And I said, ah, this thing, Happy Timers. I never heard of it. So I said, I'll send you the link. So I email it. And right in the title, I put NSFW. You know, like, no, you don't want to open this with the kids around. Do it at home. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't even know where to begin, but we kind of already hit on it. But let's begin with parents. This one is not for your children. You know, do not listen to it with your children. Do not watch it with your children. It is... It's kind of like Sausage Fest with Muppets.
Oh, yeah. Sausage Party. Yeah.
A Sausage Party. Yeah.
Right.
It's like Sausage Party with Muppets. Or what was the puppet one? Team America World Police.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. It's kind of like one of those, you know, but like even worse. I mean, it's like horrible. But I have to say, though, as bad as it is, Ted sends to me, goes, do you think we should do this? I'm like, well, let me watch. Man, I laughed so hard. I'm like, oh, yeah, we got to do this. I mean, it's pretty funny, but... You got to have a crooked sense of humor, I guess, at some point. Did you do some research on this one?
So I know a couple of things. I think it's Jim Henson's son.
His son's doing it, right?
Yeah. And then, you know, I just, McCarthy, she's great. This is her wheelhouse. You know?
Right.
I love her. I think her movie's called Heat too, right? Is it called Heat? Her and The Heat. Oh, her movie's called The Heat with Sandra Bullock. And to me, that was one of the funniest ones of this genre of like shock and awe action movies, you know?
But what's cool, though, is, well, maybe not. I don't know. I guess depending on which side you're on. So Sesame Street filed suit saying that they were trying to get the Sesame Street side of it taken away, where it says, you know, no Sesame, all street.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What Sesame Street was trying to do, they were trying to get rid of it to say that, you know, you're going to confuse people and Sesame Street has that wholesome family. You're going to come to us because just it's Sesame Street.
Yeah.
And instead, we don't want kids to be confused and accidentally view this raunch that you're putting out there. So a judge overruled and said, no, this isn't confusing, which I kind of find it hard to believe, but sure, because they bring in like from the director of the Muppets, like Take Christmas, the Muppets Take Manhattan, and whatever it is. I mean, it to me, it's because even I had to wait and until it got started, and I was like, okay, this isn't like for kids, you know. But initially, you don't know where it's going,
right? And the legacy cards are a total like red herring. They throw you off.
Oh, totally. Totally. Yeah. You know, but like you said, Brian Henson is Jim Henson's son who directed it. But they play so close to Sesame Street that I don't know how it's not confusing. But I thought what was awesome. So STX wins the case.
In a week.
Yeah, it was really quick. And they win the case to go forward with the movie from the lawsuit. So STX responds with a puppet. They don't even respond like in a press conference of like the director or something. I mean, they put a puppet up there whose name is Fred Esk, E-S-Q, like Fred Esquire or something, you know? He's like a fictional puppet lawyer who's releasing the statement, and I'm going to read it. So it's, quote, while we're disappointed that Sesame Street does not share in the fun, we are confident in our legal position.
That's awesome.
I mean... It's like, you know, the confidence just turns out to be well-founded, I guess. I don't know. But I love how they put up a puppet to be their legal counsel. I mean, it was just brilliant, you know?
Oh, it's so great.
When they're blowing heads off and puppet, like down feathers are flying and stuff. I mean, it's just totally insane, you know? And just the vulgarity and it, let's put it this way. It looks hilarious. And this is another one. Like we watched Sausage Party. We watched, which was freaking awful, but we also watched, Clarissa and I, Game Over Man.
Right.
Yeah. No, it wasn't that great either, but I would watch this again. This would be another streaming one.
Yeah, I definitely want to see this. I don't think I'm going to get Anne to watch this one either.
Oh, I was going to say, is Anne into this?
No, I don't think so. Melissa McCarthy is a pull for her. She does appreciate her comedies, but she checked out, I think, on Bridesmaids because it was a little too raunchy for her taste.
Yeah.
I started binging Riverdale. Have you seen Riverdale?
No, I haven't.
So I thought Riverdale felt like in the wheelhouse of something Anne and I could watch together. Anne watched the first 15 minutes of the first episode, and she's like, I'm out. I don't care for this. We'll find something
what
else.
What network?
Oh, it's CW, but it's on Netflix now.
Okay.
The second season was coming on Netflix, so I'm like, I'll check this out. You know.
And is it raunchy, or what is it?
It's a little Twin Peaks meets 90210, but and it's so funny because it's Twin Peaks meets 90210, and the mother, one of the mothers of one of the characters, is from Twin Peaks. And Luke Perry is one of the dads in this. So it's like the actual actors that are playing the parents are all the actors from the original shows that they're kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
They're not really spoofing because it's actually a spoof on Archie Comics. So it's been an amazing week. And it's actually kept me up many nights this week watching a couple episodes.
Nice.
But that's what's gotten me. So sorry, that's a sidetrack. Yes. Anne will not watch this. I think I showed her the trailer and that final scene with the silly string.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the one that, you know, if you haven't lost me by then, that's the one that's either going to push you over the top or say, this is my kind of movie.
Well, I was on the floor laughing and Clarissa looks at me and just rolled her eyes. You know, and I said, so you don't want to watch it? She goes, no, I'd probably watch it. I'm like, yeah, you will. You know, I mean, yeah, the creative silly string. Oh, my goodness. It was like, it was just brutal.
I just looked up your, because you were talking about all the great Fred Esquire thing. And this, here's the title of this article. It says, STX fires back at Sesame Street work. At Sesame Workshop's ejaculating puppet lawsuit.
Yeah, the silly string was. I mean, I don't even want to go into it because I don't want this to be an explicit episode.
Silly string. Yes.
Yeah. Go watch the trailer. That's all I got to say. Go watch the trailer.
Yes.
So you're thinking you will see this, though.
I will see this streaming.
Okay. Yeah, I probably would, too. I mean, I wouldn't go to the theater for this, you know, I mean, and you know what the main reason I wouldn't go to the theater, other than I don't want to be seen going into the theater, is that the people who are going to go there are going to be so obnoxious. You know, like teenagers or, I mean, who knows? And they're all going to be hooting and hollering. I'll miss half the movie anyway.
Yeah.
So, I'd rather just watch it in my own living room at my own pace. And.
But I think you might get a contact high from going to this in the theaters.
That's true. I could see people being stoned out of their gourd with this one, you know. But anyway, do you have a three-word review for this one?
Okay, so for this one, it's pretty simple, crazy Muppet sex.
Crazy Muppet sex, yeah.
So
I thought you were going to do something with Silly String or something, but hey.
Yeah, you know.
Close enough.
I could workshop it a little bit, but
yeah, we'll you don't stick need with that. To. You don't need to. Yeah, we get the point. You know, the one thing I want to say, though, the reason that I thought it was a little bit confusing, because they bring in the old guy who looks like the old guy is up in the balcony. Uh-huh. They bring in the Fozzie Bear. They bring in a bear that looks like Fozzie Bear, you know. And yeah, they're different and stuff, you know. And to a trained eye like ourselves, we might look at it and say, you know what, these characters, they look like the characters, but I know they're not the characters. But like to an 8-year-old, they're going to see a bear and they're going to say, well, that must be Fozzie Bear or whatever, you know. And I don't know. I mean, my opinion, I think it is confusing, and I can't get over that they can get away with doing something so vulgar in the face of something so much that kids watch and so like innocent in a sense. I mean, but whatever, it is what it is.
Well, like I said, when the teddy bear was out for Ted on and all the bench ads and the bus enclosures, it was like
Hey, the Out of Home.
Out of Home, exactly.
There you go.
The kids wanted to see that. They want to see everything.
In the marketing world, it's like Nag Factor, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, man, I think we covered them.
Awesome.
You know, we talked about a bunch of stuff to include Solo and all the rest. And we got kind of a lot in tonight.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go watch some more Riverdale.
Hey, you go for it. I think I'm going to go watch the back of my eyelids. I'm tired, man. I got up early today.
All right, man.
All right, Ted. Well, hey, you have a good night, man.
Have a good night.
Should we do this next week?
Oh, let's do it again.
All right, I think so.
All right.
All right, we'll talk to you.
See ya.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.